Welcome back to the Unanimous Decision Podcast. And guys, you look at your calendar, you look at today's date, you think, oh, it's a normal podcast. I promise you it is not. Welcome back to Podcast Week. For those of the uninitiated, Podcast Week is the time of year where we take 5 days, fill up with five podcasts. We're going to talk about Power Five football with Michael Felder tomorrow on Tuesday. On Wednesday, we're going to be talking about the NFC with Nada. Well, on Thursday, we're talking about the AFC. And on Friday, we'll have our SummerSlam extravaganza with myself, Cam, and Rich from PW Torch, and everyone's favorite podcaster, Sam Franco. But first, as we always kick this thing off, I want to make sure everyone knows about the podcast. This is UD Pod, Unanimous Decision Podcast. You follow me on Twitter at DPalm66. Follow the show on Twitter at UD Pod. Follow the entire network at, you guessed it, the MTR Network on Twitter. You found us, don't lose us. Subscribe in the iTunes Store. Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast for absolutely free. Leave that 5-star review on iTunes. We'll read it on the air. Email the show at udpodcast@gmail.com. That is all the little business I have to do. Now to the big business. Guys, so when I started this whole podcast thing about 7 years back, I did it almost on a whim. I was moved to Philadelphia. And for those of you who heard the origin story, strap in. It's going to be a short version of it. But every comic is someone's first comic, Stanley told me. So here we go. I moved to Philadelphia with my now wife, and I needed someone to talk to sports about, talk with about sports. And my old roommate had just started writing for a Georgia-based website called Dude You Crazy. And I said, hey, man, do you guys need an extra writer? Came on to write. Ended up pitching the idea of a podcast, and I helmed the Dude You podcast, the not yet award-winning Dude You podcast, mind you, for over 160 episodes. We had a great time there. We did our first podcast week there. I moved over to UD Pod. You're now listening to episode, I believe this is 146 of UD Pod here at MTR, and I couldn't be happier to do it. But I am happy to bring back my old roommate. The reason I'm in front of a microphone more than a lot of people other people are indirectly responsible for it, but directly, I got to say thank you and welcome to my good friend, Chad Floyd. Chad, what's going on, man?
Man, not a whole lot. To hear that I'm part of your origin story is humbling, to say the least. Are we going to start on a sincere note here?
Look, I'll be honest, guys. So the way Podcast Week works is I record these podcasts over the course of like 2 weeks, and then or like a week actually now, and then I roll them together and put them out. This is always the first one I record. It's always the first one I drop because without Georgia football, I don't have a microphone in front of my face. Seriously, Chad. Like, yes, we're going to start with a little sincerity here because everything that's come of this, the live shows, the events, the podcast.com nomination for Character Corner that just closed on July 31st, all that stems from you saying, hey, man, do you want to write for this website? And I got to say thanks, man. I really do appreciate it.
Hey, man, not a problem. Well, you came up with the idea of, hey, let's put this on an audio medium, and here we are 7 years later. For those who don't know, I still run the SB Nation UNC podcast. Unfortunately, the Dude You podcast has hit about an 11-month hiatus at this point. You know, people have babies and stuff. I don't, but other
people. It's crazy talk. People aren't you and me, for the record. Let's just make sure that's very clear.
We have dogs.
We do have dogs. But I think,
man,
it's interesting.
I set up
because,
that segue for you.
No, I think it's interesting because when I talk about the writing I used to do and like the writing we used to do, doing podcasts almost kind of replaced it for me. And I know that you said you run the podcast over at SB Nation. You don't write as much because, let's be really real, writing's fucking lonely. It's you and a computer screen and like that blinking dot of what's your next letter going to be. And when I think about writing, I think about college football, I'd be remiss not to mention and say thank you to the currently shuttering doors of EDSBS, Spencer Hall and his team over there. They found ways to make this stuff that we talk about, they elevated it. So we talk about it in a fun way, in a football nerdy way. Sometimes we talk about it in a larger macro sense where we talk about the exploitative nature of the entire enterprise. But Spencer and his team found ways to remind us of the humanity. If you follow me on Facebook, I wrote something on Facebook about the end of EDSBS, what it means to me. Chad, without, you know, taking us too far afield from our Georgia podcasting, what does this kind of – it's interesting because it feels like the end of an era, but Spencer's going to be around. He's going to be doing stuff. But not having EDSBS bring us those flowery descriptions of, like, say, an O-line coach having an aneurysm, it's going to be a little bit different.
Well, I think you nailed it on your Facebook post, and that's a must read for you MTR subscribers if you're friends with Daniel. And if you're not friends with Daniel, then that's probably for the best. But if you are, I mean, what Spencer and what EDSBS did so well is just humanize the sport and made, they carved out the niche of making college football writing fun. And I know that's why I got into it when I did. I mean, if we talk about 7 years ago when you joined the team at Dude You Crazy. I started out just based on a tweet from Andrew Hall, the founder of Dude You Crazy, who I read his site, I enjoyed his site, and he made it fun as well. And I told him the first time I talked to him, I said, you're like a D grade Spencer Hall in a way. And
Very accurate on a lot of levels.
it really is. Shout out to Microsoft Paint. But Spencer Hall just has a way, and I know he's still going to be around, so we're not eulogizing him or anything.
Right.
But really just putting words to life in a way that both makes you laugh and makes you feel something. And I'm sitting here on the EDSBS site right now, and I'm just kind of thinking of all the hours I've spent, reading 2,000 word editorials on, how this fluffy butted corgi represents what's wrong with college football or something like that. I mean, it's just the end of an era, and I don't really know, with Bill Connelly moving on from the analytics side of SB Nation over to the godless, faceless, nameless network. I mean, there is just a drain on entertaining college football writing right now, and I'm going to miss it.
We're going to fill that gap a little bit by having a lot of fun talking about the University of Georgia. Little question about our bona fides. Chad is a dual graduate of UNC and University of Georgia's graduate school. I am a lifelong Georgia fan whose entire childhood was ruined by the specter of Steve Spurrier, even as I admired him from afar as a human and shit talker. Let's look back at the season that was 2018. You and I did this last year. We were, for us, cautiously optimistic. If people were like, "Oh, you guys are cocky," like, no. We're terrified with everything we said last year. And I think that's just from being the providence of having watched this Georgia team occur over years. But you look at the last few years, and I think objectively, this has been one of the best stretches of my lifetime in Georgia football. And I still head into the season a little bit nervous just because expectations have ratcheted up. You look at last season, they opened up blowing out Austin Peay, or P, it doesn't matter. They then blew out South Carolina. They then blew out Middle Tennessee State. You see a pattern emerging. They blew out Missouri. They blew out Tennessee. They blew out Vanderbilt. They lost at LSU in a game that I, on this podcast, during podcast week last year, told everyone they would lose. I said, "We're going to lose to LSU at Death Valley in a midday. It's going to happen. We're going to be riding high." And we got shellacked 16-36. Bounced back for a big win against Florida. Beat the doors off Kentucky. Beat the doors off of Auburn. Boat race to UMass. We did to Georgia Tech what you do to Georgia Tech. Asterisk there until they start recruiting in Atlanta again, and I'm going to get nervous. But then we took the loss. For the third time in one calendar year, they lost to Alabama. And then they lost to Texas in the Sugar Bowl. So you look at this Georgia team, and some people tell you, "Oh, that's not a success." Guys, a team that beats all their rivals, a team that shows up when they have to, and that loses in the NF, in the, excuse me, the SEC title game by one touchdown to the eventual, to the, I mean, say, traditional powerhouse national champion, I'm okay with that result. The Sugar Bowl didn't end the way I wanted it to, but that's lots of other like weirdness postseason. What, looking back now with the benefit of hindsight, is your impression of this Georgia team last year?
Well, last year when we did this, what I kind of came back to was that the 2017 team was a year ahead of schedule, and it was a lot of fun when they were just beating the dog out of everybody. Go back and look at the Mississippi State game, which I remember being nervous about, that they won 31-3, and that was kind of the coming out party where they just pantsed everybody, save for Auburn, and then second and 22 in the national championship game. Last year
Awesome.
for me, with the weight of expectations, just was not fun. The Missouri game, I think that was a little bit more of a slog than we remember. Georgia had some serious fumble and interception luck to kind of create a margin in that game, but Georgia was not really stopping Missouri on that day. The only game in the Kirby Smart era besides the opener against UNC back in 2016 that I have attended was that shit show at LSU. And I mean, right away when Georgia pulls out the fake kick, which I think, that's got to be some Death Valley leftover Les Miles juju. You just realized it was going to be a long damn day. And, I rewatched the Florida game last week. I didn't remember it being as close as it was, but that goal line stand that Florida had, for some reason, everything that manifested itself in 2017 that was kind of a perfect storm and an awesome roller coaster to ride just made 2018 a whole lot less enjoyable. And, as they develop their identity, I think there are some key things that we're going to need to watch for this year.
Well, I think that it's interesting because your framing is correct. I think that that's a lot of Georgia fans approve. Mine has always been, and you've talked to me, we've talked about this before. I'm trying to be very much in the moment as a Georgia fan because I know the bad thing's going to happen. So I enjoy each game, each down, each play a little bit more. I try to. But you're right. It's hard to say disappointing when you're looking at a three-loss team. And it's hard for people to empathize with saying, we should have done better. And it's even hard for me as lifelong Georgia fan to be like, 11-3, you greedy son of a bitch. But I see what you're saying because of how well 2017 went and the expectations that were ratcheted up in that year early season. 2018 always felt like we were on the precipice of something going wrong. And while I take some perverse pleasure in being right about the LSU game, it didn't feel good. But I turned towards this season and Chadman, let me ask you first, what do you think? Like, we're going to go through the offense, defense, special teams like we always do. We're going to look at the coaching staff changes. We're going to look at departures. But just 30,000 foot view, what the hell do you expect out of this Georgia squad?
I expect them to be the third best team in the country. This schedule, with Notre Dame, with Texas A&M coming in late November on the SEC West rotation, provides some obstacles. But I mean, first of all, the best home schedule that Georgia's ever had.
Ever had.
I mean, if ever there's a year to have a Georgia season ticket, it would be this one. There are things that we'll definitely get into that, really are going to make or break this season. From a 30,000 foot view, I've just got kind of a storm cloud over the season just with the way the Justin Fields thing worked out. Because I look at Jake Fromm now and he is the guy. And if you go back to 2017 when Jacob Eason went out in the first quarter against Appalachian State, we didn't know what we had in Fromm. And at this point, if a similar situation were to occur, Georgia could be properly screwed really early on. And, everything is just kind of under the guise of, well, shit, what if Fromm doesn't stay healthy?
Right. A lot of question marks behind from. Let's look at what we lost here. Obviously, graduation took a lot of players away from us, but so did the draft. We were second in the SEC with seven draft picks. The most Bulldogs ever taken was in one draft of 2002 and 2013 was eight. Six were drafted last year, excuse me, the previous year. And this year it was first round, DeAndre Baker to the Giants. Second round, Mecole Hardman to the Chiefs. Fourth round, Riley Ridley made it to the Bears. I was really hoping to join his brother in the Falcons. But it is what it is. Fifth round, DeAndre Walker ended up with the Titans. Sixth, the center, Lamont Galliard ended up with the Cards. And seventh, Isaac Nada ended up with the Lions. And Terry Godwin drafted by the Panthers. These are all big losses, particularly on the receiver core. Terry, Mecole, and Riley, that's our catches last year. That's the weapons that Fromm was throwing to last year. And while we're going to talk about the talent coming back, it cannot be understated how much talent is leaving.
Yeah, and not to mention Jeremiah Holloman, who is no longer with the team. Georgia loses their top five receivers. Besides DeAndre Swift, who had 32 catches out of the backfield, Charlie Warner and Tyler Simmons combined for 20 catches, and those are the leading returning receivers.
The only returning receivers. No one else in that field's caught a ball from Jake Fromm in a game.
I mean, you start there. You also have the loss of Elijah Holyfield, who went as an undrafted free agent to the Panthers as
Which
well.
is such a goddamn steal. It still makes me mad.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And, I just being here in Charlotte, I'm fully expecting him to be the number two guy behind Christian McCaffrey this year. On defense, the DeAndre Baker loss is huge. He was absolutely a lockdown corner. And the biggest thing that Georgia had a weakness in on the defense last year was the pass rush. And Baker covered up a lot of those ills because he took away half of the field.
For sure.
So, what I really see is more opportunity than downside on the defense. I think the pass rush is going to ratchet back up. I think the secondary is going to be much improved overall, despite the loss of Baker. But, the losses are such that, you're in the Alabama Clemson realm where you don't rebuild, you reload. And I'm excited to see some of the young guys get out here.
I keep forgetting that DeAndre Baker won the Jim Thorpe last year, but that's true. DeAndre Walker was one of the best pass rushers we had in that not so great pass rush last year. Let's start with the
He was
offense
the
then,
only pass
because
rusher we had.
you said it, not me. This is a team that over the last 2 years has gone 24-5, losing games to highly ranked opponents. Like the games you're supposed to lose are the games they lost. Like the games that, like, oh, that's going to be a slugfest. They pulled out a couple, but they've lost ones that they haven't lost one where you're like, well, what the hell happened here? That's one thing that's been kind of eliminated from the Rick era is those not showing up against lesser teams. They dominate those lesser teams. Let's talk about the offense. Kirby Smart is backed into possibly the best quarterback situation in the SEC, save Alabama. What he's done here is they got Fromm as the hometown kid, because Fromm was originally, so my wife is from Warner Robins, so I've heard about Jake Fromm since I started dating Susan from her dad. And so I was always like, yeah, oh, of course, I'm sure it's going to be good. The crow I've eaten the last 2 years over Jake Fromm in that home is remarkable and completely earned. Because we got to remember, when Fromm came in, Easton was the established starter. Easton had gone to the SEC title game. Easton was the quarterback prodigy brought on by Mark Richt. Fromm stepped in, I think it was the second game, ended up starting every game since, and the team hasn't looked back. You point out rightfully, what's the young man's name? The quarterback, Justin Fields. Justin Fields, who's brought in as the number one quarterback in the nation, expected to push Fromm, could not find his way on the field. The open secret was that his father had said that if my son does not start, doesn't get playing time, he's going to leave. He's now quarterbacking now at The Ohio State University, which I'll be talking about more with Felder in our Power Five preview. But you look under center. Guys, you've got a starter, 29 game starts, 28 starts, and he's one of college football's most elite passers. He's on the short list for all the offensive awards this year as a true junior. He is on the short list for the Heisman, averaged 9 yards in attempts since becoming the starter, and only the third Georgia quarterback ever to win an SEC championship game. I think that if we can cut down on some of those poor performances on the road, particularly this year, when we go to the schedule later on, that's going to be the biggest turning point for him. What do you expect out of Jake Fromm this year? Because for me, when we get to the rest of the offense, I think he just needs to be that steady hand, be who he's been. If they're not going to have to ask him to play outside of himself, and that's going to be the biggest benefit to Jake Fromm. Because guess what? Who he's been is pretty damn good.
Yeah, absolutely. Who he's been is a guy who will end up sneaking into the top 10 of the NFL draft just because, while he does not possess the arm talent that Eason does or the physical gifts that Fields does, he is probably the, I hate to use the term game manager, but he is the best game manager I think we've ever seen because he can win you games with his arm. He has not been required to do that very often at Georgia. I mean, you go back to the national championship game, he was going to win that Alabama game with his arm. The SEC title game that the Dogs ended up shitting away in the second half last year. I mean, kind of the same story. In the first half, he was perfect and
Right.
he was winning them that game with his arm and his ability to spot throws, hit the back shoulders, take the top off the defense with the occasional deep ball. I mean, he is everything you want in a college quarterback. And, like I said at the top, my biggest concern is just keeping him upright and keeping him healthy.
Because you're right. That's one of the problems about the depth issues at Georgia is that when you've got so much talent on the field, guys come in expecting for a chance to compete. And that's all you can do as a program. People got mad when Trevor Lawrence pushed out the incumbent starter at Clemson. That's the mark of a good, healthy program is when you say, look, when you come in, if you're good enough, you'll play. And that's how you make that leap to an elite program. And when that happens, when that situation is widely established and understood, players are going to leave. Players are going to go back to Washington. Players are going to go to Ohio State. I think it's less of a downside that people will say, oh, you should have found ways to keep them. Hoarding talent is not the name of the game. Making the most of it is, and I think that Georgia found a way to do that. And what they've done is they push Fromm every year so far, save this one, they've brought in a blue chipper to say, this is the guy who's going to take your job. And every year Jake Fromm says, not so fast, my friend, on that Lee Corso. So look, I'm all for it. I think that this has been a great, cornerstone to build. My question now becomes, what next? Because I don't know if Fromm leaves this year, and I'm not trying to get ahead of myself. We've got to obviously play the season. But the question of what happens, like you said, if Fromm gets injured, because of the strength of recruiting, which you follow more closely than I do, just the patterns that we've established, I think that Georgia would be salvageable without it, basically because of the next position group we're going to talk about, those fucking running backs. DeAndre Swift is back. Brian Herrien will be the number two. He's back. James Cook, Samir White, McKinney McIntosh, all in that backfield. You and I have jokingly, not so jokingly, called Georgia running back you for years. Is there any more time than it's more obvious in the last three?
Well, I mean, you had the Gurley and Marshall group, which was incredible. And then you had Chubb and Michelle behind that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I never worry about our running backs at Georgia. And just to take it back to quarterback, you can only play one quarterback and only really keep one guy happy. And they gave Fields every opportunity. Fromm was just too good to replace. Exactly. At running back, Swift is probably too good to replace. But then you look at James Cook, who is Dalvin Cook's brother, and you can see that explosiveness. Zamir White was the number one running back recruit in the country. He's coming off of two different ACL tears, but has, by all indications, been an absolute stud in the spring and through the summer months. Behind this big offensive line, which I know we're going to touch on as well.
Oh, you know it.
You do not worry about the running backs, because they've got five elite blue chip guys. You know, maybe don't call Herrien a blue chipper, but he has
well serviceable number two.
Well, he's well outplayed his recruiting rankings.
For sure.
any of those guys just behind this line are going to average 6 yards a carry and make Jake Fromm's job a whole lot easier.
Oh, for sure. And I think that that's probably one of the benefits here. Also, you talk about the injuries to was it White with the knees?
Yeah.
There's one program in the country that I know knows how to handle that because of the way they treated Gurley, because of the way they handled Chubb. It's this program. So I think that more than anything, you've shown the depth of opportunity and the ability to load balance so that when you get to the league, you're not burned out. So that you have things like, I don't know, Georgia running backs leading the charge for the Patriots to win the Super Bowl last year as a rookie.
Yeah, and what you have is, you know, I mean, keeping guys fresh is one thing, but then you have DeAndre Swift, who is, you know, the most explosive steady hand you can really imagine. I mean, the guy's going to break off a 70-yard run once the defense is tired in the late third, early fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. But then Cook and White are guys who are absolute X factors. You know, one of them could emerge in, I hate to bring up all the Alabama comps, but the way Trent Richardson did behind Mark Ingram. Ingram had just won the Heisman, and Trent Richardson comes in, and did he win the Heisman as well?
I believe, yes, he did.
Yeah. You have guys that have all of that potential in the world, and, I mean, Kenny McIntosh is probably an afterthought. I mean, I assume he redshirts. And
he's on my list. I had to say his name. But you're 100% right. I think that this is obviously the strength of the team, but one of the best things that's happened at Georgia is that they've created the – atmosphere where no one needs those 40 yard carries a game. Because when you come in to that running back room, hey, Todd Gurley stayed 4 years and didn't complain about carries. Hey, Nick Chubb stayed 4 years, didn't complain about carries. And both those guys use their position and their influence to talk to the younger guys and get them ready for when it be their day. That's one of the coolest things about this, is that DeAndre Swift is not coming in here with unknown expectations. He's not coming in here with stars in his eyes about what he can do. It's all about him. He knows that he got there because guys paid it forward for him. And so that young running back room is going to be just a wealth of knowledge. And if you're a young top-end running back, the competition at Georgia doesn't scare you away. It says, oh, this is a great place for me not only to be featured as a talented running back, but also to grow my skill set while on a college campus, which, you know, coaching has evolved into more recruiting than coaching these days. So if you've got that experienced hand in the room who's willing to pay it forward, that says a lot.
Yeah, and if you look at the numbers, I mean, Swift had 163 carries. He was a little bit unhealthy early in the season. Holyfield right behind him at 159. Herrien had 50. Cook had 41. You know, there are going to be opportunities for these guys. And, you know, while you're not going to get 20 carries and 120 yards, what you're going to do is get 15 for 105. And, you know, Georgia can afford to ride the hot hand if James Cook is – just outrunning a defense on a given day. You give him the ball 15 times and he takes it for 200 yards and three touchdowns. I mean, it is an embarrassment of riches at the running back position. And the nice thing about Georgia is, you know, given the way the offense operates, all of those guys will get opportunities and enough touches to, you know, at the end of the day, keep guys happy.
Another thing that I think is going to be very important about this running back group is something you and I touched on when we talked about the departures. The loss of all those caught balls is going to be, I think, something very important because, like you said, James Cook, Zamir White are going to be dangerous open field players. Their hands are going to kind of dictate their amount of playing time because there's so few balls being caught on the outsides going into the season. Tyler Simmons and Trey Blount are the only two receivers who've caught balls from Jake Fromm. There's speculation that Charlie Warner could be, as a tight end, could be very impactful. But you look at guys on the list here. I want to just go down the incoming list because, again, like you said, you follow recruiting more than I do. The receivers who are, you know, kind of touted to make a difference, Demetrius Robinson, Lawrence Kager, Karen Jackson, Matt Landers, and then true freshman George Pickens and Dominic Blaylock. Is there anyone who you think has separated themselves kind of going into the season as someone to talk about or someone to watch?
I keep waiting for Robinson to break out, or Robertson.
Yeah,
he was adjusting last year, but had a tremendous freshman season at Cal. So, I mean, he has done it on this level, which you can't really say for any of the other guys in the room.
Right.
So if he can live up to his potential, I think that's going to be a huge win for Georgia. What I'm interested to see is, you know, with the embarrassment of talent at running back, if somebody like James Cook doesn't become more of a slot receiver where where you're getting, you know, the slants and the quick outs and the quick hitches and letting him make plays with the ball in his hands because, you know, you do have that luxury. Matthew Landers is interesting to me just at 6'5", 220 as a red zone threat. You know, I think Georgia definitely loses that in Jeremiah Holloman. So, you know, he could be a guy. Lawrence Kager, the transfer from Miami, you know, another 6'5", 220, big body, never really lived up to his billing at Miami. There are just so many guys who are going to have opportunities. And then your point about with Godwin and Hardman leaving, I mean, those were basically guys who jumped in as freshmen and made an impact. So I can see Blaylock or Pickens doing that. I think Blaylock's going to be kind of the more explosive threat that you pair with a Landers or with a Cager, you know, on the other side. And then whatever you have coming out of the slot's going to be just a nightmare to match up with as teams load the box to stop the run. So Georgia as a passing team, I think, is going to be efficient, if not explosive. And again, with Fromm at quarterback, that is kind of the MO.
I think that we're going to err towards explosive because of how much talent's in that backfield and how many question marks are on the outside. But I think you made a really good point pointing out some of the size that's coming in because during the Smart era, we haven't really had that size on the outside. We've had a lot of the shifty guys, had a lot of the fast guys who will make you miss in space. Shout out to Sonny Michel. But we haven't really had the guys who were just going to go out there and make those big catches and be that size guy. Even when AJ was there, he was so slight of build. And shout out to AJ Green hurting his ankle in that shitty field. He was so slight of build that, you know, he was tall, could go get it, and he obviously ran perfect routes, but the durability was always a question. You look at the size of these cats coming in, I'm like, okay, these are guys who, one, have seen the speed of college football, and two, are big enough and physical enough to make a difference, even if it means, hey, hold that block another extra yard to make sure these guys are clean going to the third level. I think that while we talk about the problems that the Georgia's talent-first perspective has kind of put on the quarterback position, it's created this opportunity at running back, at quarterback, or excuse me, at wide receiver that you don't see across the nation in this kind of equitable distribution of the ball. A place where it has mattered, but it hasn't resulted in any sort of disruption, is that massive, beautiful, wonderful offensive line. Now, you know how I feel about offensive line play, and watching these guys play last year was just, it made my heart sing, man. We're bringing back four of the five guys who started the lineup, and two more guys who gained starting experience in 2019. Ben Cleveland, who started the season, at right guard, but was injured in game four. He's back. Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson, the tackles, are back. Probably the best tackles in the country. I'll take the Pepsi challenge with that. Solomon Kinley is a fourth-year guard. He's going to be starter at left guard. And they're shifting over Trey Hill to center to replace Lamont Galliard. And as someone who's made that guard to center shift, not the easiest thing in the world, and the fact that they're keeping him there means that it's working.
Yeah, and if you look at it, I mean, I've got Phil Steele open right now. Cade Mays started about six games as a true freshman. He is not listed as the starter at right tackle. You look at Clay Webb, who's listed as the backup at center. He was a guy who was an early enrollee, number three overall at his position. Besides Solomon Kinley, all of these guys carry top 10 overall, and the way Phil Steele does it is for the offensive line as a whole. So Georgia's too deep on the offensive line are guys that you only see at Alabama or Georgia, really. Like
You're
Clemson
talking about
does it with
eight
their
guys
offensive
coming
line.
back who started games in the SEC.
Who have started games and who were legitimate four and five star talents coming out, and who are coached by Sam Pittman, who, for my money, is the best in the business as an offensive line coach.
We don't say coaches' names anymore in here because every time I do, they get hired away.
That is fair. The other thing that kind of blows me away is if you just look at the size of this offensive line. 320, 335, 330, 325, 340 in Isaiah Wilson. And these are not just big guys who are taking up space. These are guys who are
No.
athletic. These are guys who can pull. Your
Watching them run
front.
screens is one of the more fun things I do every Saturday.
I said Georgia football in 2018 wasn't fun. Watching Andrew Thomas pull out on a bubble screen and decapitate some 180-pound cornerback is fun as hell.
Objectively.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you don't like that, then you don't like football. But the downside risk of Georgia, and as we touched on with the potential for if Fromm went down, they're going to keep Fromm's jersey damn clean, and he's only going to be dropping back 15 or 20 times a game because last year with all of these guys as freshmen and sophomores, all of the running backs averaged at least 6 yards a carry. These guys are sophomores and juniors, getting into draft eligibility. They were boys and now they are men. I just don't see a situation where Georgia is not running for 250 yards a game. I mean, it's insane, and I am trying to avoid hyperbole, but it's really hard to do because this is probably the best assemblage of offensive line talent paired with great offensive line coaching that I've seen in my college football watching days.
It's easily the best since you and I have been talking about Georgia football. It might be the best in the country. Like I again,
Oh, this
people
is the best
said
offensive line in the country.
like I was trying to like I was trying to it's so weird for you and me to be doing this because when we started talking about Georgia football on the internet, it was not about look at how badly we're going to mash out people and trying to temper expectations. It was like, well, if this breaks the right way and that breaks the right way, things should this is a weird place to be for the last 2 years for us because you're right. This Georgia line put them in a position where domination is not only not out of the question, it's damn near expected.
The third team offensive line would probably all start at any other SEC East school save Florida. It's
And I'll argue with
ridiculous.
you about Florida probably. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, but I
Look.
mean the other thing you said about competition, I mean, this defensive line's going against the most talented offensive line they're going to play every day in practice. Those receivers who are unproven are going against the two deep of elite defensive backs every day in practice. I mean, competition breeds results.
And they've got a not just seasoned play caller, but someone who's been in the fire, who's seen ugly things, who pulled out that Notre Dame game his freshman year. You see, you've got a field general who's seen most of the things you're going to see in college football and can keep anyone who's feeling uneasy about something in a situation, can keep their head in a live fire situation. But you did a great job of the segue there, and I stepped all over it. I apologize because this Georgia defensive line, there's six seniors on it. And this is a defense that you and I it's hard to describe because college football these days is built on the big play. And there's one thing this Georgia team didn't do last year was allow those big plays. Part of that, like you said, was DeAndre Baker taking away an entire side of the field. It's tough to throw that. But it's also because this team played so consistently so well, but so it was hard for them to elevate in big moments because they're always playing at a certain level, if that makes any sense. They were up and down last year. They did a bad job of getting pressure. They did a bad job of getting tackles for loss, but they weren't going to give up those catastrophic backbreaking plays. What they would do is give up consistent drives and not answer things on the field. We're going to talk about the coaching departures that literally still keeps me crying at night. But let's start about the defensive line. Tyler Clark, I'm a huge fan of. I'm a huge fan of. I think that if he can continue the evolution of what I the growth that I think he's shown on the field, I think they're going to be just fine up front. The guys around him, David Marshall, Michael Bennett, Julian Rochester, their guys there. Justin Young had a really good spring, apparently, ended up with the start on the first team defense on G-Day, a fifth-year senior. There are a couple of rising juniors. For me, it's a question of will we see the production up front reflect the effort happening behind him this year? Is that unfair?
No, not at all. And
okay.
And with Clark and Julian Rochester, you had guys stepping into a major role for the first time. Jordan Davis got a lot of reps as a true freshman, despite, you know, not really being that elite recruit. But what you have is three guys who are running three bills out there that have faced live bullets now. And I think Georgia probably put the gloves back on a little bit, you know, after all the talent they lost in 2017. You know, I mean, you're talking Roquan Smith cleaning everything up behind him, and
everything.
But you know,
God, he's so good at football.
Yeah. So, and what they did was just ask the guys on the defensive line last year to occupy space. I mean, you look at the yards per carry on the rush; it was at 4 yards a carry, which is still well above the national average, or well below the national average.
Right.
Only up from 3.7 in 2017, but you weren't asking the guys to do as much last year. I thought the defense was a lot more vanilla in 2018, and you know, really, instead of asking guys to go out and make plays, they just said, hey, don't give up the big play
and trust the scheme. Yo, I didn't realize you just said it, that Jordan Davis was a true freshman last year.
Yeah, he was a guy that I followed pretty closely. Being a North Carolina guy, he was you know, he would have been the top of Larry Fedora's class that year, and ended up at Georgia kind of at the 11th hour. But you know, you look at the depth there, and you have guys like Devontae Wyatt, who played well in limited reps, David Marshall, who you mentioned, who has been completely recruited over. I mean, Steele lists him as a third stringer at this point. And then, again, go back to the true freshman, Trayvon Walker, 6'5", 290. Nolan Smith, who's going to be more of a rush linebacker, 6'3", 235, number one player in the country. I mean, holy shit.
Well, let's go to the linebacker core right now. Like you said, they lost a lot coming in the last year with the loss of Roquan Smith. And honestly, what I think one of the biggest problems Georgia fans had was we didn't – not you and I, but like the royal we – didn't appreciate how much Roquan Smith did on that football field. And watching this group last year is underwhelmed because, like you said, the front seven – the front four was – the front three, I should say, was dedicated to occupying space. The back five, the back four was dedicated to shutting down things deep. And I felt like our biggest weakness was the linebacking core this year with the experience they're bringing back, with the numbers they're bringing back, the names they're bringing back. Is this a place where we think we can make up some ground?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you talk about losing Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter, Reggie Carter, Devin Bellamy last year. All of the guys that stepped in were basically freshmen and sophomores. Tay Crowder was the elder statesman, and I thought he was the best player on the front seven last year. He had not faced live bullets, really, until last season. You look at Monty Rice on the weak side. Walter Grant, you know, had his moments as well. Those were guys that were experiencing growing pains, and you have steady veterans like Rice, Crowder, Jermaine Johnson, who's the number one junior college player in the country, coming in as a strong side linebacker. And then you add to that the talent of guys like Brenton Cox, who played some last year, Nolan Smith, who, like I said, is the number one recruit in the country. You have both the extreme high upside of guys coming in, as well as the high floor of guys who, you know, had the kid gloves on a little bit last year.
I think it's very interesting when you look at someone like a Nolan Smith and you say, oh, the number one prospect. Obviously, you know how I approach recruiting. It doesn't matter to me until you're on the field. But because of the competition, the air of competition that's been brought around this program, we could see if the talent's there, he's going to play. And it's that comfort that allows you to draft the next five-star recruit, the next Nolan Smith, to say, look, if you can beat the guy out, it's your spot. Just come get it. You got to come willing to fight and work. And despite what people say, you know, I know the big thing here is kids take an easy way out by leaving schools without getting into, like, the power dynamics and the – obvious hypocrisy of coaches who take jobs leaving saying that kind of shit. It's not true. Guys don't go. Keith Marshall came to Georgia knowing Todd Gurley was coming. All these running backs came to Georgia knowing that Swift's in place. Like, these guys come here not to say, oh, I want it handed to me. They come here to fight, and they come here to win. And guess what? Sometimes if your talent isn't good enough in the place, you've got to find a place where your talent can be showcased. I don't begrudge any player, be it Justin Fields, Jacob Eason, for leaving and finding the best fit for them. And I think that the attitude around that has been kind of fictionalized and dramatized. But when you look at the secondary and the loss of Baker, I can't overstate how good DeAndre Baker is. And I want to preface everything I'm about to say with that, because I think the secondary might be pretty fucking good next year.
Yeah, and again, I mean, at quarterback, you can only have one guy getting the majority of the snaps. So you're going to have attrition at quarterback, but you have not seen that attrition anywhere else in Georgia. The SB Nation National College Football Guys did a post yesterday showing that the transfer portal has not really changed anything as far as the number of guys transferring out. And Georgia is a great indication of that, because you can go three deep all across the rest of the roster and say, yeah, the best players are going to play. And you don't have a guy, you know, getting a third of the snaps and saying, this isn't enough for me. Let me transfer down a level, or let me go to Texas Tech where I can be the best defensive player they've had this century. You have guys who value the coaching, and then they get themselves drafted and really exceed the expectations placed on them based on their college performance in the NFL. But let's, you know, I kind of stepped on your segue. Revenge is a bitch, I know. Let's talk about the secondary, man. I do think that overall, I mean, the talent is better. I can't believe J.R. Reed's still on campus.
Shh. Don't let him know he should have left. Like, obviously, I'm big on players getting their money, but if you're going to stick around, stick around. J.R. Reed's back. His third year as a starter at left safety. There's going to be a lot. The thing about it is there's so much talent that was forced to step up because of the DeAndre Baker factor that I know that they can do it. Eric Stokes, every time they threw at him because they couldn't throw at Baker, he made people pay. Your guys weren't open because of Eric Stokes. When the other guy is Eric Stokes, you've got problems, because now he's shifted to number one. Tyson Campbell, I didn't know he had 10 starts last year. That's
yeah,
nuts.
I thought he got replaced, freshman. But I think the use of starts is a little bit misleading there, because he got straight up replaced by Stokes about midway through the season. So, I mean, I guess you could technically classify Stokes as a nickelback on last year's defense, but he's going to be the guy this year.
Well, Tyson Campbell was a true freshman last year, which is crazy.
They both were.
This is nuts. There's so much youth and talent over there. You talked about the JUCO coming in at the linebacker. DJ Daniel, there's a five-star prospect that just brought in to the corner to back up those corners, to push, like I said, to create competition. The nickel position is going to be interesting. Mark Webb is obviously the incumbent, but there are other people breathing down his neck. Special teams, the place that you and I have cried about for years on the internet and also in person, everybody back. Rodrigo Blankenship, back. Jake Camarda, back. I need Camarda to get more consistent. Blankenship is one of those guys who, down the line, we're going to say we took for granted. And the rec spec jokes are there. It's fine, but he doesn't miss a whole lot. Field goals and PATs in college football, consistency is what you ask for. Consistency is what he delivers.
Man, I disagree with you. I think Blankenship, unless he has some kind of senior year, just complete meltdown, just goes down.
Which we've
down
seen
the best
here.
In
which
Georgia,
we've seen.
Georgia history. We have seen that. Shout out Blair Walsh.
Shout out Vikings fans.
Good gracious.
I tried to warn you.
Well, I just cursed the whole season. 9-3.
Jake Camarda, the punter, doesn't get a lot of work because of this offense, but we saw the highs and lows of him last year as a true freshman. I just need more consistency. I need not to have those shanks that make me just wince for the defense to come out on a short field. If when you're asked to deliver, you can deliver, Jake, keep it going. We've seen the highlights. Eliminate those lowlights, will be just fine. Let's talk about the coaching staff, because this is one of the years where I point out again that Clemson has broken college football and that they pay their assistants more and more money to not leave. And therefore, they ruin the financial structure of how you're supposed to pay coaches. We're going to cover this in the Power 5 preview with Felder tomorrow. But Mel Tucker leaving has me so upset. Partially because Colorado now is a real football coach and the Pac-12 is about to get absolutely run through. but also because Mel Tucker's attitude, and while you're right, like last year, because of the loss of Roquan on the youth on the side, on the in the middle, and up front, you had to kind of dumb down the defense. The same principles are going to be in place because they recruited, they promoted from within. It's going to be both, I want to get the last name right, Dan Lanning and obviously Kirby Smart championing the defense. Offensive coordinator James Coley is moving up because Jim Chaney moved over to Tennessee, where he'll essentially be the offensive head coach with no position coach responsibilities.
Good fucking luck to him. He'll be looking for a job in 2 years.
Yes, he will. But I think it's interesting that, and it's telling that Smart hired from within. That tells you that nothing's major is going to change. There'll be some wrinkles added, obviously, but the structure of what we've seen should maintain and should be the same. And does that gives me a warning. I know people are like, maybe we need to make some big changes. Guys, 25-4 of the last two seasons. This is not something where you tear down the boat. This is something where you patch the holes and you keep it moving. Are you good with the internal hires?
Yeah, I mean, where were you on Nick Saban when Will Muschamp left, and then when Kirby Smart left, and Jeremy Pruitt left? I mean, this is what coaches come to Georgia to do, is become the next head coach out of that tree. You know, unsuccessful though it may be overall, all you can ask for is an opportunity. And with a guy like Mel Tucker, you know, he's a position coach at Alabama, moves over to Georgia with Kirby Smart, runs an excellent defense, and even
excellent recruiting.
Absolutely. And even with the defense taking a step back, which based on talent and based on everybody and their mother being a freshman or a sophomore last year, he still got hired at a P5 job and still has an opportunity to take advantage of a very weak ass Pac-12 South division. So, you know, kudos to him. And that's what Georgia should provide as an opportunity to coaches. I don't know what Clemson is doing and how they're keeping guys like Brent Venables.
They're breaking the sport. We'll talk about that.
They also happen to find guys that, you know, were content to stick around until the right opportunity came up. And Venables is going to be a lifer there. Chad Morris waited until the right opportunity to get back into Texas. And, you know, now he's the head coach at Arkansas. So he's an SEC head coach, but, you know, guys are going to leave for promotions, and that's just the nature of the beast. I don't really.
Unless you pay coordinators $1.7 million a year. Let's do what we always do. Let's break down the schedule. Let's talk about wins and losses. Go ahead.
Just one more touch on that. You know, old what's his name that went to Tennessee? Holy shit, I just lost his name.
Chaney.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy with an offensive line background. As an offensive coordinator, I prefer a guy who has a background with quarterbacks, and James Coley has been the quarterback coach. You know, he's going to make the offense a little bit more, you know, I think there's something to be said for coaches kind of leaning towards what they know. And I think if Coley makes this offense more quarterback friendly, that's hell to pay for other teams. So I think the upside is there on the offense to improve. The defense, just based on talent alone, is going to improve. And
right.
Landing's going to run the same system that Kirby's run and that Kirby ran for Nick Saban at Alabama, and the talent's there too. So I don't really see any downside in losing either Chaney or Tucker.
I'll say this. See, this is where the only place where you and I will always differ ideologically as far as offensive football is that you're right. I do see the appeal of having a quarterback background running your offense, but my stance will always be, if you can't block it, we can't run it. And so that's why I liked having Chaney as the OC. And we'll see. Honestly, I hope you're right, because I think that you can take for granted that we can block most things with this line.
Hey, man. There's a reason in this shuffle Sam Pittman got promoted to associate head coach.
Sam Pittman should be promoted to interim god from Georgia football so they never leaves. Whatever it takes for Sam Pittman never to leave, that should happen. Let's talk about the schedule. We open up in Nashville, headed Georgia to Vanderbilt. 7:30, August 31st. It's a win. That's a win. The line is 21. It's not going to be that close. Blowout city. Am I wrong?
I can't really see a way in which you would be. Vanderbilt loses their quarterback. They do bring back Keyshawn Vaughn, but they're going. You know, Keyshawn Vaughn's running behind an offensive line that got absolutely ravaged by graduation, and that does not spell more than like 24 carries for 39 yards for him.
Murray State and Arkansas State are coming to Georgia next. Both those are layups.
Yeah, like I said,
I was leaving crazy because you had a dissenting opinion, but I didn't think there would be. The fourth game of the season is the first real test. Georgia's favored by 10.5. Georgia's hosting Notre Dame. Notre Dame game in South Bend a couple years ago was a rainy, soggy fest that was kind of Jake Fromm's initial coming out party. Do you think that this Notre Dame team can hang talent-wise with Georgia? Because I think coaching-wise, there's no chance. Talent-wise, what do you think?
I don't really see it, man. I hate to be the guy that says, yeah, we're going to blow out a top 10 team. But Notre Dame, for me, I mean, if you look at them, they'll hang around with the elite teams like your Clemsons, your Alabamas for a quarter or two. They'll have 10 to 12 win seasons like we saw last year, based kind of on smoke and mirrors, but the schedule's kind of got to break their way for it to really work out. The schedule's not going to break Notre Dame's way this year. they don't have the speed at the skill positions to really threaten Georgia and take advantage of Ian Book's talents. Their defense is good, but you know, this is a game that's, I think the final score is going to make it look a little closer than it was, you know, something in like a 27 to 13 range or something like that. And you know, it might be a one score game midway through the third quarter, but Georgia's talent and depth is going to win out.
And now we get to the meat of the, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's just going to take everything going right for Notre Dame to come into Sanford Stadium and win that game.
And let's put it at night, Georgia people, if you're listening, let's go ahead and put that by game at night. Just let's look at the Georgia people nice and soft up and end it early.
Yeah, it is at night.
Excellent. Georgia, Tennessee, headed to Tennessee next. Look, I hate a lot of teams. The color orange, I'd say this every year. Neyland Stadium, the Vol Navy, fuck them all. Fuck that song. Fuck Tennessee. And I think that's what Georgia's going to do, is going to fuck up Tennessee real bad.
Yeah, they return a whole hell of a lot. But, you know, that's a whole hell of a lot that was just hilariously mismanaged by Butch Jones and Jeremy Pruitt. Oof. You talk about demeanor in a head coach, and Jeremy Pruitt has the exact opposite of what you would want.
As a former member of the Pruitt Hive when he was at Georgia, I can acquiesce to that point.
I think Tennessee, you know, just based on their the way their schedule breaks out, you know, they don't have the killer run where they played Georgia, Alabama, and Auburn all within 3 weeks last year. I think they are probably the most improved team in the SEC, but they are not on the level of Georgia or even that other orange team in this division.
South Carolina, the bones that are left there, is coming to Georgia on the 12th of October to take this loss, right?
Man, I got to talk about this. South Carolina's schedule. They open against UNC, which that's probably a win for them, unfortunately. They draw Alabama from the West and go to Texas A&M in their every year rivalry. At Georgia, at Tennessee, home against Clemson, at Missouri, which, you know, Missouri's pretty tricky too. This is probably going to be one of the better eight-loss teams you've ever seen.
South Carolina fans, that wasn't me, guys. That was Chad, but he's right. Kentucky's coming to Georgia on the 19th.
Sure.
After losing Snell, like, it's over, right? It was cute for a year.
Yeah, it was neat, and, you know, Terry Wilson's back, but not only do they lose Snell, they lose Josh Allen, the good Josh Allen.
The good Josh Allen.
They lose their whole offensive line, behind which Snell had a great season. Brother, man, I mean, yeah, I think the honeymoon's
I'm excited
there,
to not worrying about Kentucky again for at least this season.
Were you worried about him last year, honestly, though?
Yeah, I was, because we got 4 yards of carry, and Benny Snell was a monster.
Yeah, that game just never really.
You know, I'm saying going into the game. During the game, yeah. I was fine, but like going into it, I was like shit.
It was either last year or 2 years ago that I circled Kentucky as kind of a trap game, and I don't remember which year it was. I hope it was last year. Just if anybody wants to go back and send the fire emojis to Old Takes Exposed, but yeah, this year I have no concerns about Kentucky, especially with that game coming at home right before a bye. No, that's not problematic to me.
And thankfully, restoring the bye before the big game, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, Georgia, Florida. I'm not predicting this game.
Man, last year was just weird enough to tilt the balance to where Florida knows they have a chance and they have the talent and kind of the proof of concept to make something of that. I guess the pro is that the three games that Florida plays prior to that are home against Auburn, at LSU, at South Carolina before they also get a bye. But maybe Florida's a little bit beaten down, but their defensive line is scary. They gave
Vicious.
the vaunted Georgia offensive line fits last year. Felipe Franks is still mistake prone, but is damn good. And I gotta say, I mean, I'm still blown away by Dan Mullen as a coach. 10-3 last year after the shit storm they've been through this decade. I'm impressed by Florida. I'm not touching this one either. It's going to be weird because it's a Georgia Florida game and Georgia should win. But that has not stopped
College
the
football
lesser team
is
from winning in the past.
super weird.
God, fuck this game, man.
Mizzou
Fuck
coming to
this game.
Athens. Mizzou's coming to Athens. Mizzou's always a weird matchup for Georgia, but in Athens on this against this team, I think Georgia handles it. I think I'm not worried about that one. The only thing I'm worried about is coming off the hangover from the Florida game.
Yeah, the thing for me with Mizzou is last year with Drew Locke, they could attack you deep and put some points on the board. They lose Emmanuel Hall as well, and Kelly Bryant, said Clemson transfer, he just does not scare me at all as a
He
quarterback.
scares me, but his lack of weapons doesn't.
I mean, they've got weapons. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. Akwudubinum, at tight end is probably the best tight end of the country this year. Larry Roundtree is pretty good, but Kelly Bryant's just not going to beat you with his arm, and Georgia's going to force you to do that.
I hope so because you and I have talked for years about the major deficiency of the same style of defense that Georgia and Bama runs is their susceptibility to being run on by quarterbacks. And so that's where I get nervous about the Mizzou thing. Again, like I said, I don't think there's enough talent around Kelly Bryant to carry a team running against this Georgia team because eventually they're going to hit him. And if there's one thing you can say about the youth or inexperience or the gloves on last year, when Georgia hits you, you get fucking hit.
Yeah, and it might be a game that's wonky for a quarter and a half or so, but that's not a game where Kelly Bryant's going to go Johnny Manziel on us and pull miracles out of his ass and win that game on the road in Athens.
Well, we've reached the point of the program where I tell you that this is my game of the year. Last year, I picked LSU to beat us on the road. This year, Georgia will fall to Auburn and Auburn. Prove me wrong, Chad.
Well,
Well, a part of
yeah.
it's the schedule, the way it breaks for Georgia. Florida, Mizzou, and then headed to Auburn for presumably a night game in Jordan-Hare, a place where things seemingly always go fucking wrong for Georgia. We'll see what Auburn's going into this is going to be coming off of LSU, Ole Miss, and then staying at home for Georgia. After they get a bye going into the Georgia game too.
Yeah, and they get two byes because they get to play Mississippi the week before that.
That was mean but true.
Yeah, here was what I mean, spoiler alert, I was going to say Georgia finishes the regular season 11-1. Give me the Florida game or the Auburn game as a loss.
Good one. Okay.
Here's the thing with Auburn. When you talk about returning talent in college football, the three biggest places you want to see it, I mean, the quarterback position notwithstanding, because Auburn is weird enough to where they're probably going to have an upgrade at quarterback just because they're going back to the Nick Marshall model. Offensive line, defensive line, secondary. Auburn returns all those motherfuckers.
It's so unfair. I was so excited. I was in the prep for this. I was like, okay, we're cruising. Oh, fucking Auburn. I look, that's gonna be a hell of a game, particularly this time of year. It's gonna matter for both teams winning one of those big high-profile games. The thing we gotta hope is not hope, but kind of know is that they will be looking forward to that Iron Bowl.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you go back to 2013, they got the prayer of Jordan-Hare and then the kick six within 3 weeks. Probably the
Also,
best
God
season
bless
they could
that
ever
pick
hope.
six for that. God bless the kick six for erasing what happened 2 weeks prior.
Yes, absolutely.
No
But
one talks
you
about
look at Marlon Davidson, Derrick Brown, and Nick Coe on that defensive line. Those are three
it.
studs. They even have a guy named Markievicz, and even in Phil Steele's limited space that he has, quote, big cat Bryant. Like that's definitely the nickname of a dude who's going to like strip sack Jake Fromm at some point in this game.
Next up, they're hosting in the SEC closer, hosting A&M. I'm not scared of A&M. Are you?
I think they're a year away. I think if Georgia was catching them next year, this would be a little bit more problematic. Getting this game at home is huge. And A&M is definitely riding the bowl bump from beating NC State 52 to 13. Of course, I have to state that final score for the record, 52 to 13. NC State, you lost that game. Kellen Mond's real good. He's going to cause some problems, but you know that. Unless you were telling me that A&M has the 2017 Georgia breakout, this game does not really super concern me. They're going to kind of be beaten down with a schedule that takes them to Clemson and, you know, Lamar in
Between their
Arkansas.
schedule and what I think is a year away from really establishing actionable depth, I think that the end of the season, catching them at the end of the season is going to be probably the best place to catch them for the next 2 years.
And here's what I will say to their credit. You know, after Alabama on October 12th, they basically get 5 weeks to build up to this game. They go to Ole Miss, they host Mississippi State, which if that game was on the road, it'd be a little weirder. Then UTSA, bye week, home against South Carolina before they finish at Georgia and at LSU. So
All right.
they're going to be as healthy as they've been going into that game.
Right. But then again, like I say, third quarter is when your depth shows, and I think that's when it's going to be a problem for them. Last game on the schedule right now, UGA at Tech. We're coming off of years where we could literally laugh at this team, triple option horse shit, high school Harry nonsense. The Tech is on the way back. And I'm not saying this to appease my Tech fan friends. I don't like you as people
You have tech
anyway.
fan friends?
I do, but whatever. But I will say this. The reason Georgia has been so good lately is because of their ability to lock down the borders around Atlanta recruiting wise. And Tech is about to start recruiting there again. So for years, under the triple option system, my dog agrees. T'Challa, I know. It's very disheartening that Tech's going to be good again. Under the
Trigger
old system,
warning.
they would basically take the South and the Southeast scraps. Like if you didn't get recruited by one of the bigger schools, you ended up at Tech to play in their specialized bullshit. Now, Tech is fully utilizing the fact that they're in downtown fucking Atlanta to recruit, and we're already seeing the fruits of that labor. I'm officially on watch for them for the next 4 years. This year, motherfucking boat race.
Oh man, 63 points by halftime should be the expectation.
That said, like, watch this space because you're an ACC guy. I'm gonna be checking with you on them occasionally because I want to see how fast the turnaround's coming because I think they may catch people off guard early. Because obviously it's a new system, obviously it's not a triple option, but I think they've got more I think they did a better job recruiting even in the short window that they had than they have in the
See, now my dog's disagreeing with you.
past.
See, Georgia Tech recruited the offensive line for the triple option. That shit doesn't get fixed overnight.
Very true.
They will be better in November than they are in September, but this is like tops a 3-win team. They are in a complete rebuild, and I like Jeff Collins. I like what he's done. Waffle House U.
God
But
damn it. You're making me like Tech.
even when Georgia Tech is fully actualized under Collins, they're not taking guys from Georgia or Alabama, or
See,
Clemson.
you said that, but one of the big selling points for Georgia, Alabama, and Clemson for the Atlanta schools has been proximity. What's more proximity than your mom doesn't even have to take a day off work to watch you play, man?
Yeah, but I
That's
mean.
my thing is that I think that the down the line repercussions of having a talented team in Atlanta is going to be more. I think you're right. I think I'm probably overestimating how quickly it happens, but I think it's going to happen.
Well, here's the thing. As an ACC Coastal fan, I'm very concerned about Georgia Tech in the rearview mirror. As
Right.
a Georgia fan, they're still not going to be on the level to consistently compete with Georgia. You know, they might get back to stealing a game every 3 or 4 years, but it's not a situation where, and especially going into this year, that it's a pressing matter for our concern or our energy just yet.
100%, man. Chad Floyd, find him at SB Nation talking UNC football. Tell the people where they can find you social media and podcast wise.
At Chad underscore Floyd on Twitter. God knows what I tweet about on a daily basis, just whatever comes through the timeline that I find funny. If you are interested in UNC football or UNC basketball, I do host both shows for TarHeelBlog.com. It is the Tar Heel Blog podcast, the football show Don't Punt to Geo, which I don't expect SEC fans to get that reference. But he basically returned a walk-off punt return for a touchdown as the Georgia-Florida game in 2012 was kicking off. And then the basketball show Between the Banners. Yeah, banners fly forever. UNC's got a lot of those in basketball. So we're a little bit more haughty dipshits on the basketball side.
I can't imagine why. Thanks again for coming on, man. A couple years running, we've done this. And before I get out of here, and because we didn't get to do this this spring, I offer you a happy belated LeBronica. We didn't get to celebrate this spring. I know the holiday was on postponement, but LeBronica all the way back now. We'll see you in the spring, if not sooner, Chad. Guys, this has been the kickoff of podcast week. I guarantee this will get less energetic and more lethargic as the week goes on. But for the first show, I'm always pleased to be joined by my good old friend, Chad Floyd. Make sure you follow him on all of his assorted social medias. Tomorrow, we'll be back with the full Power 5 preview with Stadium.com's Michael Felder, your favorite tweeter's favorite tweeter. Follow him on Twitter at In the Bleachers. You can follow me on Twitter at DPalm66. Follow the show on Twitter at UDPod. Follow the entire MTR Network at, you guessed it, the MTR Network. Subscribe, leave those 5-star reviews, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.